In the Jewish tradition, you cannot start an event without mentioning destroy Jerusalem. I pledge to myself not to start any event without mentioning destroyed Gaza, tortured Gaza today, in these very days, under the Israeli bombardments, starvation, attacks and destruction. And we have to commit ourselves. It's very good to exchange about important issues of our time, but we cannot do it without parallelly engage ourselves in a real campaign to express first our rage, our terrible anger about what's happening there, and calling for immediate measures, immediate sanctions against Israel to stop these policies, to stop these attacks, and to demand that the military and political responsibles of Israel will be tried at an international court of justice for the war crimes that are being committed right now in Gaza. My second note is that though I am Jewish and Israeli, and I've been grown in a Jewish Orthodox family and background, I don't speak about any kind of Jewish perspective. In that sense, I want to disconnect myself from part of the title. I'm speaking from a broad, progressive, radical maybe, anti-Zionist perspective. I don't know if it is Jewish. I can find in my Jewish education some roots of some of the values, but I can find in the same education exactly the contrary. So I speak for myself and not out of any kind of Jewish perspective. My first point is that Zionism, unlike what many of my Palestinian friends, many of my Muslim friends all around the world sometimes claims, Zionism is not the product of Jewish religion or Jewish tradition. Zionism is a product of modernity. And it is the result, the product of modernity in three ways. First, it is a colonial movement, and the expression of its time at the end of the 19th century, where colonialism was a way, a natural, normal, accepted way to resolve problems, to make progress, to civilize. Second, it's a product of modernity because the conception of normality by Zionism is normality equal homogeneity. A normal society is a homogeneous society. And we are at the time, at the turn of the 19th-20th century, of nation states or ethnic states. And it was perceived as absolutely normal that the dismantling of the big empires will bring about states which will be as ethnically pure as possible. The Balkans, for example. The folkish ideology in Germany. In that sense, Zionists didn't invent anything, neither on the objective to create an ethnic state as ethnically pure as possible, nor on the means through a colonial process. Zionism is also the product of modernity because this project, which was the last of the colonial projects, the real last wagon of the colonial train, couldn't reach its goal without Nazism. Nazism transformed what I call in one of my books a kind of hippie project People dreaming to have some kind of farming somewhere, into a project without the rise of Nazism in Germany, mass immigration of Jews, but not only Jews, Jews with technology, Jews with capital in the 30s, and after the war, the mass of Jewish survivors, which no country in Europe wanted, and they were very happy to say, you know what, build your state in Palestine. Without the immigration, the mass immigration of Jews, a modern state in Palestine was not possible. And 1933 is a turning point of the Zionist project, from this kind of hippie project of some dreamers coming from Eastern Europe into a modern project of building a modern society, modern state with modern means. Zionism, and this is the second point, connected to this idea of an ethnic state, is first of all a philosophy of separation. In that sense, the wall being built in Palestine today has always existed, but not in concrete and with barbed wire. It always has existed. It's a philosophy of, if we want to be normal, we have to be among ourselves, and as much as possible only among ourselves, without any foreign body. This is also why sometimes I call Zionism a self-ethnic cleansing project. The perception of anti-Semitism as natural, the rejection by a majority of its minorities, was perceived by the founding fathers of Zionism as a natural process, as a natural behavior. And we have to anticipate and to self-extract ourselves and to find a place where we too will be among ourselves and among ourselves only, or almost only. In the colonial process, it was not a big problem, because all colonialism, not only Zionist colonialism, ignored the indigenous population. They were part of the landscape in the best case. They were not a human, national, social, ethnic phenomenon to be taken into consideration with a voice about their land and about themselves. Third point, and here we touch the topic itself. In order to achieve its goal, meaning building a Jewish state in Palestine, Jewish, not in the cultural sense, but in the demographic sense, a state of Jews only as possible. Zionism has to sell itself as the protection of the dominant forces in the world, and to present itself, as Roland explained about Lord Balfour, and the negotiation between Lord Balfour and Chaim Weizmann in 1916-1917, to show how a Jewish state or a Jewish homeland at the beginning in Palestine could protect the interest, the dominant interest of the planet at that time, that is the interest of the dominant countries in that time, against Asian barbary, as Herzl said. Later on, against the colonial movement and the colonial revolution, parallelly to against the Soviet bloc, and to be a barrier, to be a wall, stopping the influence of communism or of radical nationalism, and today, against the new barbarians. In that sense, the role of Israel, its modus operandi, could be but as a front line of so-called civilization. meaning front line of the dominant civilization, of the civilization of the dominant powers. What does it mean today? Today, at the time of so-called clash of civilization. Clash of civilization was an analysis of the world, very disputable, of Huntington, trying to describe the post-Soviet era as an era of new clash of civilization. I don't want to argue with Huntington, because gradually, in the neoconservative circles, think tanks, research centers, magazines, journals, from an analysis of reality, it became a political program. And I would like to deal with the role of Israel in this strategy of clash of civilization, not anymore in the descriptive part, which was Huntington's position, but in what some of the neoconservatives has developed into a strategy. Now, these back to the question of the dog and the tail, I think there is no dog and no tail when we are speaking about neoconservatives. The neoconservative movement or trend which developed in the mid-80s, part and as a result of the end of the Cold War, was an Israeli-American gang where Israelis and American right-wingers with a new philosophy of the world, a new perception of the world, have been working together, thinking together, analyzing together, and projecting together a new strategy. In the United States, this wing of the Republican Party was called the Likud. But in Israel, those members of the Likud were part of this gang, were called the Americans. And in that sense, there is no tail and no dog. There is one entity, one big dog. The only important difference between the American parts of this neoconservative trend, and I will say staff, and the Israeli counterparts, is that the Israeli counterparts went to power 5.5 years before the American counterparts. And we have been able to test in Israel the policy, the neoconservative policy, and language, and here language is part of policy, slightly before the American did. What is this neoconservative trend? It is to identify and to create a new global enemy. We have not anymore communism as a global enemy. We'll have terror. And terrorism was described as a global new enemy. Rapidly, terror was identified with Islamic terror. And from Islamic terror to Islam, not among everyone, but among dominant currents, especially in Israel, with Islam as synonymous to Islamic terror, as synonymous to terror. Second, this is a global and permanent phenomenon, which can be fought only through a global, permanent, and preventive war. These concepts of terrorism and global and permanent war were implemented, and this language was implemented in Israel since 1996, with the government of Netanyahu, the key figure of Israeli neoconservative, an Israeli-American, an American-Israeli, completely integrated in this gang, and all his advisors, all from New York, was implemented in 1996, when, after the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin, Netanyahu and the right went back to power, which they had already before. And since 1996, we have neoconservatism, sometimes under the flag of the Likud, sometimes under the flag of the Labour Party, like Ehud Barak, on power in Israel. They are the ones who are leading this war. They are not only leading this new conception of the permanent war against permanent preventive war against terror. They've changed radically the relation to the Palestinian people on that instance. It's not anymore an enemy. It is a threat. And you don't fight a threat the same way you fight an enemy. An enemy is a neighbor with whom you have hot debates, hot arguments, big divergences. Sometimes you resolve by force. But the annihilation of the other is not part of the program, necessarily. A threat is something you have to annihilate and to fight against until you will destroy him, because otherwise he will destroy you, according to this conception. This is why I totally disagree, and I have made it some kind of mantra when I am speaking, especially in Israel, and even more in the Palestinian territories, totally disagree with the concept of second intifada. There is nothing like a second intifada which could be compared with the first one. The first intifada was a revolt of the Palestinian people, of the Palestinian people of the West Bank and Gaza. A Palestinian initiative, part of a movement of liberation, part of a wave of liberation movements. What is named as second intifada is not another uprising. It is an Israeli offensive, part of this war. It starts as an offensive. It is a planned offensive. It is not the Israeli army reacted to the first intifada brutally, with hundreds and thousands of dead and wounded, with mass destructions, but reacted to an uprising, reacted to a national revolt. The second, so-called second intifada, is not a reaction. It is an Israeli initiative, planned by Ehud Barak and his staff, and by the neoconservatives, part of this permanent preventive war. It was a preventive war, or preventive war, in inverted commas, preventive permanent destruction operation. And this difference has to be understood well, not on the quantitative level, and not the first one was with stones, the second one was with guns. One is a Palestinian initiative provoking an Israeli reaction. The second is an Israeli initiative, an Israeli offensive, part of a global and permanent offensive provoking some kind of Palestinian reaction. And we have to understand this so-called second intifada as part of this global permanent preventive war against the Palestinians. It is not meant to achieve anything. The objective is not anymore to put an end to bombs in Tel Aviv or to revolt in the West Bank. And when it is presented in the Israeli media now for 10 years now as a permanent war against terrorism, who, an endless war, to use George W. Bush a concept, an endless war which doesn't have a fixed objective while achieved, it's the end of the war, because it cannot never be achieved, because the threat of terrorism is permanent, global, and all over the world. In order to do that, and one of the colleagues before mentioned it, Israel, were a little bit ahead. It started our war before 9/11. Where it became the declared policy of the United States of America. When it became the declared and the public discourse, almost bipartisan discourse, of the American administration, but also, in many instances, of your own government here in Great Britain and in most of Europe. In order to the Sharon discourse was, you will see, you will see. This threat that we know, this terrorism, is not an Israeli-Palestinian. It's not even a Jewish-Muslim problem. It is a global problem of civilization. And this is how suddenly a new concept appeared, especially after 9/11, of a concept would have made my parents and grandparents laugh or cry, I don't know, if they would heard it, of Jewish-Christian civilization. Against, when you say Jewish-Christian with a comma, it means against someone. Against Torah, meaning against Islam. This concept of what is Jewish-Christian civilization, as far as I know, the relation between Jews and Christianity during the last 2,000 years, most of the last 2,000 years, were of blood, of massacres, and not in the past, far past. 50 years ago, 6 million Jews were massacred in Christian Europe by many Christian believers. What is this nonsense of Jewish-Christian civilization? It never existed. There was a Jewish-Muslim civilization. This is a reality for hundreds of years. Andalus, with ups and downs, not the paradise, sometimes we dream about it, but which was a real civilization of creation, of coexistence, of the peak of cultural production in Europe at that time. But now, we forgot all of that. No. The natural alliance is the Christian, Jewish-Christian civilization. This is a natural alliance against who have been always our enemies, according to this myth, to this new myth of clash of civilization, which is Islam. And Israel plus itself, at the forefront, the advanced trench of this so-called civilization in the war against Islam. 2 years ago, I say to my friend, the mayor of Qalqilia, the former mayor of Qalqilia, while being on the balcony of his municipality building, you know what responsibility you have on your shoulder? Because the wall of Palestine, the wall which is destroying the Palestinian West Bank, is passing 50 meters from his municipality. Those of you who know Palestine a little bit, Qalqilia is on the wall and completely surrounded by a wall. And I say, your wall, this wall, which is in front of your balcony, makes you not only the forefront of Palestine, you are at the edge of Palestine and Israel, you are the front line of the barbarians. Behind you, you have Palestine and Iraq and Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan, all the barbarians. You are the line of confrontation of the barbarians, while your colleague and friend, because they used to be friends, of Kfar Saba, the next 1 kilometer Israeli town of Kfar Saba, also not far from the wall, but 1 kilometer, not on the windows, has a heavy responsibility to protect the whole civilizations against you and all your barbarians. Because Kfar Saba, Israel, Europe, North America, and the wall of Palestine, in fact, is not anymore the wall separating Palestinians, not Israel from Palestine, this is obvious, but not even Israelis from Palestinians. It is the wall of class of civilization, of George W. Bush, of Ariel Sharon, of Ehud Olmert, of Tony Blair. The wall which is cutting the world into two when Israel is taking upon itself to be the front line, the vanguard units of this so-called civilization in this permanent preventive, global permanent and preventive war. I don't have time to say one short word, I would have liked to develop it, about a similar role which some Jewish leaders here in Europe are taking upon themselves, using this fallacy of Jewish Christian civilization bullshit to put the Jews at the front line of the racist anti-Islamic campaign in Europe, especially in France, as we know. And I warned them, together with my friends of the European Jews for a Just Peace, which is a coalition of organizations all over Europe, of progressive Jewish organizations. Don't be stupid. Okay, you are reactionary, it's one thing, but you are reactionary and stupid. Don't be stupid. You are being pushed at the front line of this war against Islam in France, in Britain, in Belgium, tomorrow in the United States. Tomorrow, you will be left by your Christian fundamentalist friends who are pushing you on the front line of this war. You will be the scapegoats. Scapegoats after being the front line. They will say it's not us, it's them. Those people who are pushing the Jews at the front line are usually, as we were told in the fifth chapter, are the ones who want to destroy the Jews. Now they use it, and now they kiss them, and now they say we are one civilization. They will be the first to lead them to a new wave of anti-Semitism, which they will themselves lead. The blindness of some Jewish leaders or leaderships here in Europe is terrible. Playing not only unjust towards history, the Jewish-Muslim relationship, unjust about the reality and part of a racist global campaign, but absolutely self-destructive for the Jews themselves. In Israel, and it's my last point, we have put as a flag, I don't like when I am described as a peace activist, we, the anti-colonial or anti-colonial movement in Israel, we have raised a new concept, which is an Arabic word, to say a very old idea, ta'ayush, living together. I don't like coexistence. It's also a problem, coexistence. What does it mean? Living together. Ta'ayush is the name of a movement also in Israel, very active against occupation. But for us, ta'ayush is not only the movement. It's a project. It's a way to relate to this war. And our answer in Palestine, Israel, to those who are building a wall between Israelis and Palestinians, between Jews and Arabs, or Jews and Muslims, is to say, no wall, ta'ayush. Bridges, breaches in the wall, bridges over the wall, tunnels under the wall, will not accept a world of globalized apartheid. Because what are these walls built all over? The wall being built, copy of the wall of Kalkilia, the wall being built in the border between Mexico and the United States of America. Exactly the same wall. What are they? They are creating a globalized apartheid. And what is the aim of this permanent preventive war, if not to reshape the world on a recolonization of the world, a globalized apartheid? And we say in Israel, we refuse. And we put all our little energies against this creating and developing and extending of an apartheid system in Israel. Ta'ayush, together. And we think, and I think, that this concept of ta'ayush should be our, not only in Israel-Palestine, but our answer all over. When the name of the game from our enemies is clash of civilization, is putting Jewish-Christian civilization against Islam civilization, the North against the South, democracies against barbarians, under the pretext of fighting terrorism, our global answer, wherever we are, should be ta'ayush. We refuse to live and to accept, to live in and to accept a world divided by a global wall. We refuse a globalized apartheid. We want to recreate a new humanity where whether your culture is Muslim, Christian, Jews, Buddhist, we are part of the same new world possible. This new world possible, the slogan of Porto Alegre, this new world possible cannot only be a world of ta'ayush and not a world of walls and apartheid. Thank you.